everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, none other than Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. Robbie.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello.
Good to be back with you. You've been a busy man lately.
I've been a busy bee. I've been running around. Yeah. Three conventions in 4 weeks and then Star Trek Day on top of that.
Wow.
It's been crazy.
It's a lot of travel. How do the conventions feel? Like generally, is it starting to feel more normal or no?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, a lot of COVID, protocols are in place and people are having to get tests and this and that and show vaccinations. So that's different. And this, the big question mark is people are just wondering, how close can we get to people, this kind of stuff, should we take a selfie at our table? So there's a lot of these kind of questions. So there's less people at the big Trek convention in Vegas, definitely less people at the convention in Atlanta, Dragon Con that I just attended, and also the Maryland one, less people, but still really passionate and excited fans to get back to the whole con scene period. That's been the overall takeaway that I've had. And Star Trek Day was fun. I got to meet some of these showrunners. So McMahon, I finally met. He was seated next to me, actually, for Lower Decks, the showrunner for Lower Decks.
Yep.
Somebody who is a showrunner for, I guess it's for Prodigy, knows you from Chuck Days. Is that right?
No, Strange New Worlds, probably Chris Fisher.
Son of a gun. Yeah, so there's so many Trek shows out there. And there's so many showrunners. It's like, what? Okay, Strange New Worlds, so
I bet it was Chris Fisher, Chris was a director on Chuck when I was producing the show. And Chris is awesome. We've been friends since then. Chris was the producer director on Magicians for however long, 3, 4, 5 years that ran.
Right.
And Henry Alonzo Myers, maybe. Henry is a writer who was on Chuck and then Magicians and now Strange New Worlds.
Who has glasses and a bit of a facial hair? Who's that?
That's probably Henry. Henry Alonzo Myers. Yeah.
Okay.
I forgot Henry's. I don't know if he's show running or, but anyway, Strange New Worlds. Yeah.
That's what he's connected to?
I think so. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love when worlds like Chuck and Star Trek collide. I love that. That's a cool combo.
It is a cool combo. Yeah. So those guys are, it's interesting because they actually talk to each other. So Lower Decks will talk to Prodigy to make sure that whatever guest stars they use from, traditional Trek, such as Voyager, TNG, so that there's no overlapping. They don't want to,
They're not fighting with each other.
Exactly.
I love that they're trying to bring back, and it's just little sprinkles here and there. Obviously, Jerry Ryan in Seven of Nine is not just a little sprinkle.
Right. Not a sprinkle.
But that's a full meal.
That's a full meal completely.
When we're using food metaphors.
Yeah, I love
that. That is a main course. And I was a condiment on Lower Decks.
Were you a condiment?
I was the mustard.
You were spicy mustard.
Yes.
Or maybe you were Grey Poupon. I don't know.
I'd rather be Grey Poupon.
You'd be Grey Poupon?
Yes.
Well, it's funny that you have these food metaphors, because this is what I've been saying to people when I was at Dragon Con. I was talking to people in my panel saying, who here is a newbie? Who's here for the first time at Dragon Con? And, a smattering of people would raise their hands. And I would say, well, guys, you are experiencing an extremely abbreviated form of the convention. Essentially, you guys are eating vegetable spring rolls. You have an appetizer. This is the exact
Just getting a little appetizer.
Just get a little appetizer.
Family share plate.
I said, wait until the masks are no longer a mandate and we're past this. And then you get the full pad thai entree noodle dish, right? Is what I've been telling people.
So nice.
There you go. All right. Okay, man. I'm excited to watch.
What is it this week?
Oh, yes. I should probably say the name of the episode.
Yes,
right?
We got to talk.
Okay.
Give it to me.
The Raven is the name of the episode. Yes. Such an ominous title.
Yes, it is. Right. A little Edgar Allan Poe, maybe. Let's go watch The Raven.
Let's do it.
Okay. See you in a minute.
are back from watching The Raven.
The Raven, yes. The Raven. Yes, the Raven. Yes. Very interesting episode.
Yes.
Very interesting. You know, you had mentioned the Ravens NFL football team, and I have to say that the Bomar aliens looked like they were wearing football helmets in this episode. They had this like safety bar, safety around the ears, you know, protector, safety. Yeah, it looked like a tackle football, American football helmet.
Yes, it did. But it also looks like something else. And I'm shocked that you didn't make this connection first. What else does it look like?
Mickey Mouse ears? I don't know. Yeah.
No, and this is how Beltran always describes them. The catcher's mask.
People. Oh, yes, they do.
It looks like a baseball. Mask. Yeah, Major League Baseball catcher's mask.
That's funny. Is that what Beltran called them?
Yes, because he would always refer to this episode and he would say, hey, you remember the episode with the catcher's mask people? And I would sit there, I would think, huh? Because I wasn't in any of those scenes.
You weren't in any? No.
No. So my bet was right. One of us was in a lot of it, and it was you. You were in a lot of these scenes.
I guess I was. So, I was in medium amount. But
I mean, you were in all the scenes.
But we'll talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. But his.
There's a reason I don't remember me being in it. I feel like I was not invested in this story, like watching it. I was like, what am I playing? Anyway, we'll get into that.
But have you ever heard him talk about this episode, about these two aliens?
Yeah, now that you mention it, I feel like the catcher's mask episode.
Right.
I feel like I remember him saying that, but I didn't put it all together.
So what he would say is he talked about the difference in the dialect or the difference in the voices between the two guest actors that were supposedly from the same alien
race.
Species, right? So played by Richard J. Zobel, who passed away, unfortunately, in 2005, and Mickey Cottrell. So both of these individuals are both Americans, but the way Beltran tells a story, one guy is extremely New York, which is not true. His voice sounds more just American, right? But the way Beltran tells a story, he's like, you've got these two aliens and one's talking like this. If you want to go through our territory, you got to do these things. And he does this kind of almost like a De Niro voice, right? And then the other guy, he does this very British and very Shakespearean. And you must adhere to our guidelines when you approach
That's Mickey Cottrell.
That's Mickey Cottrell.
He was from the South. He was like from Kentucky or something.
Or Arkansas.
So he's got a because I picked that out right away. I was like, that's a Southern twang in there.
But it's Southern twang mixed with he's doing Shakespeare. Like he's like a very classically trained, you know, actor sounding voice. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right to you? Yeah. Yes. So
I think actually Mickey Cottrell, he had a line in here that like, he had a line where he said something like, maybe our translators are not working or something, but the way he said it with such attitude and such a Southern passive aggressive thing that I was I'm very familiar with, that Southern smile while you put a knife in someone's back.
They all bless their heart. Yes. Yep. But the way Beltran tells it, it's always been this heavy, heavy New York accent guy really very British guy. But now that I listen to it, that's not it. It's actually a very American sounding guy. And then someone who's got a Southern aristocracy aristocracy sounding voice. Yes.
Okay. The Raven, teleplay by Brian Fuller. First episode that I know of that Brian has got his name on.
Yes. But not only teleplay, he is... half credit story by Brian Fuller and Harry Dockler. Mm-hmm. So Harry Dockler and Brian share the story credit. Mm-hmm. But yes, this is the first teleplay by Brian.
Yeah.
So, and I liked it. I think he did a great job with this.
I think he did a great job. Script. I mean, Brian, when he came on to our show as a writer, I remember he was one of the first people that I was aware of being a fan. He was crystal clear about, I am a fan of this franchise. I love this franchise.
Yes.
I love the genre of science fiction and comic book heroes and horror movies and all of it. He was just a bit, he felt like a fan getting his first story editor job and was thrilled. Was so excited.
And he flew his geek flag high in the air for everyone to see. And it was just you walk into his office, and in his office, he had all these figurines from different fandoms that he, a lot it of looked
like
a com-
it looked like a comic book store.
Yeah. It's a little, exactly.
I felt like he would walk into a comic book store because he had the action figures, the figurines, the collectibles, the all of it, comic books around.
Yeah.
No, he was he flew his geek flag high.
Yeah. Which is cool because I
thought it was super cool.
You know, I mean, he's more into it, I think, right? It's not just a job for him.
Yeah.
He's passionate about science fiction. He's passionate about Star Trek.
Yep.
So that was what's so great about Brian.
And LeVar Burton came back and directed
That's
again.
Right. Yeah. Yes. What was LeVar's first episode that he directed? I can't remember now.
I don't know.
I thought this was his first episode.
No, I don't think so.
It was something else then.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying. He directed Ex Post Facto in season one.
Okay. Yeah, so then that would have been his first one then. So this is his second sophomore effort.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Or maybe
his third.
I feel like he's done more. I feel like he did 8 or 10 episodes.
I do feel that too. I do.
He did
feel
a lot of
too.
Episodes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do remember when LeVar would direct, he had a golf cart on the lot. Maybe he had an office. I think he kept an office on the Paramount lot after Next Gen went down.
He had his own golf cart?
And he had a golf cart on the lot. Hmm. And I remember him coming over in his golf cart, and he would smoke cigars outside.
Yes, that's right.
You remember that?
I remember the cigar smoking.
And he'd sit
in the golf cart.
He's sitting in the golf cart.
Smoking cigars.
Smoking the cigars between shots. He was very sophisticated. I always thought he had style. He had sophistication. He was like the epitome of that Hollywood lifestyle that I was just like, oh my God, look at LeVar.
Had a say in casting Mickey Cottrell and his sophisticated delivery of his
Maybe he did.
Yeah. Let's do our poetry synopsis.
Yes, let's do a poetry synopsis.
Okay.
Absolutely. Abso-frickin-lutely.
My haiku synopsis for The Raven is as follows. Seven has flashback. Wants to rejoin collective. She faces her past.
Oh, that is much better than the Netflix synopsis.
Happening.
Netflix should replace their synopsis of Voyager goes through an unknown part of space and they don't want him there.
The xenophobic aliens.
Yeah, no. That is the worst Netflix synopsis I think I've ever heard us read. It was poor. It's a zero.
It was substandard.
Okay. All right, here we go with our limerick synopsis of The Raven. Neelix teaches Seven how to chew. Thank God he didn't feed her Leola root stew. Drawn into space by a Borg signal broadcast, Seven discovers a buried memory from her past. But at least she got to play with a big phaser rifle. Pew, pew.
You and Rebecca are great at that. You're so good. I just want to say that made me laugh so hard.
Because
instead of, well, the pew pew was something I used in a prior
That's right.
Poetry thing. That's so right. I think it was in the subconscious of either you or Rebecca. I don't know. And then the other thing, which I was going to laugh so hard, you rhymed it with Leola Roots too, but I thought it was going to be some version of poo. And so that's why I was starting to laugh,
giggle, because poop is funny.
Who's funny? Stu's not so funny.
Stu's not funny. No.
No. Can I hear one more reading of that, please? I just want to hear it.
Neelix teaches Seven how to chew. Thank God he didn't feed her Leola root stew. Drawn into space by a Borg signal broadcast, Seven discovers a buried memory from her past. But at least she got to play with a big phaser rifle. Pew, pew.
This is like sci-fi Dr. Seuss in a way. I love it.
Yes, it is.
It is. Thank you so much for that.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Good job.
Thank you.
Let's just jump right into this. This
so
sucker.
Janeway, we open with Janeway and Seven in Da Vinci's, workshop.
That's right.
I love that set. I wish we had done, just like everybody knows, I would love to do more Captain Proton. I wish we had done a ton more.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was great for our show. I wish we had done more Da Vinci's, honestly.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. Janeway's trying to teach Seven about just relaxation and creativity. And opening up her imagination.
Yeah.
Like being human means that you kind of get in touch with your feelings and you detach from tasks. I think they talk about, like, you know, Seven said something like, well, when I was Borg, I was assigned a task. And when that task was complete, I was assigned a new task and I just moved on. I did things that were efficient. And Janeway says something like, well, it helps my efficiency to relax sometimes, Seven. And I thought that was great, great wisdom. Yeah. I felt watching this, that Kate Mulgrew really believed in these ideas. Like Kate was very, when she's talking about creativity, because that's Kate's wheelhouse, like as a human being. It gets into, you know, you can't have a lightweight conversation with Kate Mulgrew.
Correct. Yeah. So this was right in line with her deepness whenever you deal with Kate off camera.
Yep.
So on camera, Janeway getting deep about life is so right.
And art and being creative.
That's her skull. That's her jam.
Is totally her jam. And I felt like as I watched it, I was like, oh, this is Kate. Like she's connecting with this material.
Yeah. I think she probably really enjoyed filming this scene. You know,
so. I think so too. Mm-hmm. It was very funny with Seven touching the clay, and it was just she was like, pushed it up, pushed it down, pushed it up sideways a bit. Yeah, it was very funny.
So funny, and I just love throughout this whole episode, Seven's answer to everything is that's inefficient, that's irrelevant, that's what I, you know, everything is inefficient, irrelevant, doesn't matter. It's almost like a teenager, you know what I'm saying? Like I don't care about this, I'm bored, you know, kind of a deal. Mm-hmm. I also noticed, I made note that Jeri Ryan's voice is so soft in this opening scene. It's very soft, it's very delicate, it's not very, you know, commandeering, I guess, or out there.
I will say that, and look, I'm going to jump all over my performance, so I'm going to be a little critical of this episode.
Okay.
Because we film scenes out of order, sometimes for actors, it's really hard to track, like, emotionally where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And actors really rely on the director, or if there's a writer on set, to remind you of these things, even though it is our homework and our responsibility as actors, it's really helpful to be reminded of that. And I felt like on this one, there was a lot of like, things weren't tracking to me. Like the point you're bringing out is like, she was already very kind of vulnerable in a way that I think that character got to later on with the scenes with Tuvok and all of that late in the story.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like we were already sort of playing the story here in a way.
Okay.
That, I don't know.
So it was premature. It was premature vulnerability.
I think it was
what you're saying. Okay. My note wasn't a criticism. My note was that I liked it where it was. I felt like she was learning. She was sort of the daughter role and Janeway's the mom role. And so she kind of fell into that. And I actually was making a compliment about the way that it was, her voice was more tender and soft.
I think Jeri had some great highs and lows as an actress in the episode. Mm-hmm. She did some wonderful work, but I felt like that it was partially, I felt like the scenes, it felt a little, not a smooth linear journey. It felt like it was sort of back and forth from vulnerability to strength to,
Well, I mean, it's hard to track. Yes, but I can see the merit of what you just brought up, because if she started this opening scene with more strength and less vulnerability, then there would be a place for her character to go in this episode, right? Where to the points in the later parts of this episode when she's dealing with Tuvok, where clearly she has to show that vulnerability.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a valid point. It's totally valid. I accept it.
And Seven looks up and she's looking around Da Vinci's workshop. She sees some wings and Janeway says, oh yes, he was, you know, hundreds of years ahead of the invention of flight.
Yes.
You know, the discovery of how to fly, he was way ahead of it. And she looks at this thing and then she goes into this flashback of Borg and something happening with Borg. But what struck me most about it was all in slow motion.
Oh.
And we never did slow motion on Star Trek. That was, the fans would know this probably better than me, but I feel like you could probably count on one hand the amount of times we went into slow motion on this show. It was very rare.
Okay.
And so to go into slow motion here was, I actually think I had done some slow motion on in Sacred Ground when Janeway was having her vision quest and sort of fainting and things. We did some slow motion, but I remember when it came up, that first episode I directed, and I pitched that idea of slow motion. They were very uncomfortable with doing stylized things like that. So I thought it was really interesting to see LeVar doing slow motion in these flashbacks, probably because they had to capture the bird flying, you know, through the hallway and stuff. And if you didn't do slow motion, that
it'd
bird
be so
would
quick.
Fly
it'd be,
by like that.
Gone. Yeah.
Yeah. So they may have said, well, since we're going to do the bird slow mo, let's do all of it. I don't know, maybe.
Why do you think they were so afraid of stylized choices, such as slow-mo?
I think it came from Gene Roddenberry. I think Gene had a very traditional kind of sense of the original series and Next Gen. And I think Rick Berman may have adopted those tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Rick said to me once, he said, the show is already so heightened. We've got rubber on actors' faces and spaceships and alien.
Stuff
he said we have to ground everything or else if we start adding stylized things to the world, it starts feeling ridiculous. It starts actually making it seem less real. So the more simple and kind of conservative and straightforward the filming is, he felt, the more real it would seem. So they didn't do much stylized stuff.
All right, makes sense.
I do remember when the bird was on set, though. I don't think I was there, but I remember hearing the crew talking about it. They were all really excited, like, oh yeah, we had a bird flying through the hall. We had to shoot this shot of a bird. And it wasn't the bird flying, by the way, wasn't a raven. It was like a falcon or a hawk or something. It might have been black.
What?
That wasn't a raven flying down the hall. That was
I just knew it was black feathers, so
it was
just assumed it
was a black bird, but I think it was a falcon or a hawk or something. Anyway.
Okay.
But it was a bird. It had feathers. Not a raven.
How can we get to the bottom of this? How can we
find she actually never says that it was a raven in the dream. She just says there's a bird.
No, she says a black bird with yellow eyes, which is a raven, is what she's referring to. Okay. Because Janeway makes that.
Janeway is like, well, what could it be? It could be a crow. It could be a it could be a crow. Maybe it was a raven. And then she goes, oh, we're jumping ahead. But yeah, later on when
But she settles on raven, though. She's like,
Janeway says settles on raven.
Janeway does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seven doesn't because she doesn't know what it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But you think it was definitely the bird used was not a raven, but some other.
I am going to bet money that it was not a raven.
Would you bet a large sum of money?
I would actually. I'd bet triple, maybe four digits. I wouldn't go six figures on this.
You'd go $1,000 on the fact that it's a raven. That's not a raven. I mean, that's good. That's pretty.
Yeah. Common. What am I going to get for my $1,000? Because I'm going to win this one because it was not a raven. That was not a raven. No way.
All right.
So let's go to the sick bay.
Yeah.
And Seven's talking to the doctor.
Yeah.
Her hair was a little messed up, which I found to be interesting because usually her hair was perfect. And I wonder if they pulled a couple pieces loose just to sell the idea that, like, oh, Seven's kind of having a tough time.
I think
we'll pull a hair out of place. That's their way of going, oh my God, she's having a dramatic moment. Her hair's not perfect.
We're going to pull out a strand from region 473, and then we'll pull a clump out from here to make it look like she's discombobulated. All right. Yeah. Okay.
The doctor does say in the scene, though, he goes, it could be something about some sort of PTSD.
That's Janeway. Janeway brings that up, the PTSD.
Oh, she does?
Yeah, she does. She says it's like a long-term PTSD.
And Seven says here, you know, I don't think it's PTSD because I didn't experience any trauma. I didn't find it threatening when I was assimilated.
Yeah, and the key phrase is Seven says she was raised by the
work. Yeah, that's right.
They raised me, so I don't see them as threatening, right?
Yeah.
And so why would I experience fear is what she says.
Yep.
The doctor then sends her to Neelix saying, these are the things that you need to sustain your physical body. Mm-hmm. And the doctor is a little snooty about the fact that he doesn't need any nutrients like that.
You know? Oh, yeah.
So
did you see Kate's reaction, Janeway's reaction when they were talking about digesting food orally or something.
What was it?
She sort of rolled her eyes and looked down with the two of them are talking and she's like, oh, dude. The hologram and the Borg talking about how they don't need human food. Oh, it was a funny reaction.
I love it.
Yeah, the doctor literally says, I hesitate, talking about Neelix's cooking.
Yeah.
I hesitate to inflict his cooking on you, but it will have to do.
Poor Neelix.
They're always piling
on top of Neelix. I also wrote down that this episode is filled with, let's pair up each series regular with Seven, you know, and give them their due scene.
Yeah.
And here's the doctor scene right now. The prior episodes, we've seen Harry, obviously, with Seven. And then now Neelix. And it's a wonderful. Oh, and before we jump into that, the next scene, which is not the mess hall, I'm confused here. I just want to mention Janeway is extremely touchy with Seven in this scene in the sick bay, where she says, like, you know, I assure you that I will help you get through this. And I just see a lot of physicality there from Janeway with Seven, which I didn't remember. So that was kind of a new thing for me. Then we jump to the briefing room. This is when we meet the Bomar, the football helmet or the baseball catcher's mask people. And they have granted passage through their territory.
Yeah, and they go up in
a few guidelines.
They go up and they use our computers, by the way.
Yes.
They're like, just start pushing buttons they know how.
Like they own the place.
Like they own the place.
What are you doing? And
they pull up. So they've not only know how to push the buttons in this scene, but they've programmed in a route. Like, when did they do that? How did they do that? How did they know how to pull it? If they emailed it to us, how do they know the password to our computer? It was very...
No, what is it? What is the thing that you drop airdrop photos, right?
Yeah,
did they airdrop? They airdrop this schematic, to our ship computer.
It was just confusing.
It was.
So next we go to the mess hall, and Seven goes up to Neelix and hands him a pad that has the dietary orders from the doctor on it. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, the pads, when we had these pads, they just had like numbers and gibberish and some letters and stuff. And in this shot, you see Neelix reading out the list and you see the pad in front of him. And I was like, that's not what that says. Like, we can see the pad.
Right.
It was a little out of focus, but it clearly was not what Neelix was saying was written on the pad. And we didn't make that mistake.
You're like a detective on this episode. You're catching these little things.
Yeah.
That's really.
I don't think that they made like stickers to go on the pad. And by the way, these pads.
Did you ever write lines and put it? Yeah, on the pad ever?
I don't think on the pad. That? I did on the console, but not on a pad. Yeah. I don't think I ever did.
Right. Okay.
Did you?
Yeah. Why not?
Of course you.
Come
did.
On. You got to. You got to do. You got to do what you got to do. Yeah. Sometimes you need that assistance there.
Yeah, I don't think it was. It did not match. Anyway,
okay.
Neelix is like, you know, he wants to make this a delicious meal.
Yeah.
And, you know, for something that how would she like it cooked, this protein or whatever, all the things he says. And she says, well, pleasure is irrelevant. And then she says something like, you're Talaxian, right? Species 218. And it's a little threatening.
Yeah, it's just, it is so off-putting that she sits there and looks at you, knows what species you are, lists your designation in the Borg archive, and then tells you your merits of your species, right?
Yeah.
Their dense musculature made them excellent drones. And I just love Neelix's Johnny Phillips reaction to the all. He goes, oh, I didn't realize that. I mean, he's so funny in this scene too, how he reacts to this. I love it.
Very funny. And then he goes and gives her a seat. He fries up some protein or whatever the doctor
does. Steams up. Yes, he does.
Steams it up. And he sets the food down on the table and pulls the chair back. And he gives her a seat.
Yeah.
Facing the wall. Like, if you're going to give this, you're going to present this thing, why don't you face her out to the stars? Like, she was just facing the inside of the mess hall.
Oh, and
there's this beautiful
saying.
View behind her. Why didn't he go, oh, sit here and here's a view of space and the stars?
Yes.
Instead, it's like, come over here and put your back to the window where you're going to be looking at a wall, basically.
Right.
I don't know. That was a little detail. I just thought, if you're treating someone to a special night out,
you're going to give them the good view.
Give them the view. Come on.
But he did give her the royal treatment in teaching her how to eat and using things like, just like a scout ship flying into a shuttle bay.
I wrote down the same comments.
Yep. Yes, I love that. Right.
I love teaching. Like, and then he says, okay, put it in your mouth. Keep your lips closed. Pull the fork out. He's walking her through everything. And now swallow. And she's like, what? And he goes, you know. He like did an imitation of swallowing. It was hilarious.
He did. And then her comment, curious sensation. And I mean, just, I just love the dialogue here.
Yeah, it was
written
good.
By Brian Fuller.
She does have a flashback there.
Yes, she does.
Of a screaming Borg man. Mm-hmm. And she's clearly, you know, unnerved by it. And she stands up. And
the implant, don't forget that weird implant comes out of her hand.
Oh, yes, right? of course, that happens there.
Which Neelix sees and starts going, uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Then she stands up and she shoves him backwards in his chair and he goes crashing to the ground. Now, that was a stunt double.
Clearly.
Freeze framed it because he turned his head away from the camera on the floor. Yeah. And that's if, you know, for everybody out there, anytime you see a character, you know, falling or something like that, and their head is like
turned away from
camera, turning away, like choosing to turn it away. It's because it's a stunt double and they don't want to see the face.
You could tell that guy was so much, his physique was so different from John Ethan Phillips. It was a joke. I thought it was the same Talaxian from episode Faces that kind of tells you about like, oh my God, I've been here forever. That guy, Rob, whatever, lives in Vancouver.
Yeah.
I thought it was him.
Look kind of like him. It was a stunt double. And then the other thing I noticed is, so Seven gets aggressive and physical and shoves over Neelix hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like 15 extras, crew members, jump up and all rush to Neelix's aid. First of all, it's a little overkill. I don't think 15 people need to run over for somebody that just fell in a chair. But they all rush over. Nobody goes to stop Seven.
No.
Who just like attacks somebody. Nobody, they all are just like, it was a little silly.
No, you're right. That was kind of funny. They're like, oh my God. Maybe they were going over and saying, gosh, why do you not look like Neelix when you're on the floor? And
yeah, you don't look like Phillips.
Yeah, you're not John Phillips. Who are you?
Who are you?
That's why I took 15.
That's why it was all of them.
See?
Got it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So we go to a commercial, I think, at this point. And then we come back.
Montage. Montage of scenes is what
the very first shot though is out in space and we see our ship flying. And it's kind of a flyby with the alien shuttles. And I was going to say, that was a cool shot.
It was a cool shot. Yep.
I thought it was very cool.
No, and the rendering of those alien ships were great. They looked cool. You know, they weren't dopey looking. They had some green
racer lights on them.
Yeah, little glow stick action going on. So I enjoyed those ships.
I thought, again, in the VisFX department, it was a bit like some of the story or performance or whatever, I felt like it was a little inconsistent because that VisFX moment was awesome.
Yeah.
But then later on, there's some that I'm like, like the planet establishing. I was like,
oh, you mean the lunar planet?
Yeah.
The lunar surface when it showed those.
I was like,
the wide shot or the far away shot of, okay.
Yeah.
What did you not like about that?
Hmm.
I just went,
hmm.
Do you have explanation to your
I'm going to talk about my performance eventually. And so get ready for some negativity. But it was just, it looked like a kind of a painting. It looked sort of two dimensional. It looked, the colors looked, I don't know. I mean, there was some smoke movement, but I didn't buy that planet.
You're picky today. Detective Picky is your name. Okay.
Yep.
All right, so the montage of scenes, starting with the exterior, which you like that shot. Then you also see the bridge. You see deck 6 in the corridor, turbo lift, deck 10, the shuttle interior. 7 now has Borg shields. She's heading to the armory to grab a phaser rifle. She basically fires upon and hopefully stuns people, right? She doesn't kill anyone, so she stuns
people. She's doing all this.
Hmm.
She's like a superhero in this moment. She is like invincible. No phaser can possibly stop her. No force field can stop her.
That's why she's walking so casually.
Is that the same? Like if there were a full board, like she's only getting a little bit of her nanoprobes coming back to life.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen a full bore 100% drone do what she just did.
What do you mean? And
we take out drones all the time.
No, we don't. They have shields too.
Yeah, but we set our phasers and we modulate and we do stuff. And then, like, I'm just saying, it was a little extreme.
Okay. You're saying she's like, too super Borg?
She was too superhero. I just don't buy it. Okay, I don't buy it.
That's fine.
Like, she was so casually walking and blowing past everything.
Okay. That's totally fine. That's
and there were tons of low angles on her. And I was like, wow, we are trying to make her into a superhero. But I just I don't think the rules are quite work that way. That's not how Borgs work. I don't know.
All right. Can I just throw one other thing in there that we have not talked about?
Yes.
We haven't talked about the new suit she has on. We haven't even talked about
it. It's like the rust brown suit.
It's the brown one. And I don't know if there's another brown one that comes later, because this one had in different lights, it had a different look to it, I think. Kind of like
gray or brown.
But I don't like the brown suit. I prefer the silver suit personally. And I remember when she showed up on set with the brown suit and I made fun of it with Jerry. I was like,
did they explain that at all?
No, there's no explanation to that. But I would joke with her. I was like, hey, wow, they give you, what color is that? Dookie is what I said. And so from then that point forward, every time she had the brown suit on, I go, oh, it's the Dookie suit today is what I would say. And
yeah, it was a weird color. It was
a very strange color.
So she's a superhero. She steals the shuttle. Another rule breaker, by the way, the shuttle all of a sudden comes crashing through, bending the metal of the
cargo bay door, right?
We know how shuttles work. If you crash them into a ship, shuttles explode. They just we see shuttles blow up and ships hit each other in space in ship battles and other shows all the time.
Well,
they don't burst through the doors and bend the metal.
You're right.
It doesn't
work
that way.
No, you're right. But what you failed to see, and this was the footage that ended up on the cutting room floor.
Oh, I see.
Her, because she's a superhero, she was able to, out of her nostrils, she shot this freeze spray, like a liquid nitrogen, which froze the entire shuttle bay door.
I forgot.
So that it became very brittle, and she was able to just, you know, knock through it like it was glass, like plate glass. It was easy. So
that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like there was a lot of stuff in this that changed the rules of the game in terms of what Borg do, what nanoprobes do, what shuttles do. And I'm fine with that. It's a sci-fi show. You can change the rules.
You can do whatever you want.
You just got to talk. You got to explain it somehow. Yeah. Like, somebody's got to say, if someone on the bridge had said, Borg can't do that. What's going on? Borg don't normally... There must be a way to recalibrate our phasers or something. Like, this is unusual. But nobody seemed to acknowledge it. It was just like, oh, yeah, she's doing this thing that we all are used to Borg doing. No, she's doing things that Borg don't normally do and shuttles don't normally do. But anyway, I get it. We have to tell a story. We have to get her out of off the ship. I didn't buy it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This one was a struggle for me. I got to be honest. And I'm not pointing fingers at any one element that failed. As I've said a number of times, we'll talk about Tom Paris and I will tell you my thoughts and feelings.
Yes. And I bet you will be overly critical of your performance.
But
rein you back. I'll pull you back.
But there were some wonderful moments. It was just a very inconsistent episode to me.
Okay.
Moments that I loved. And moments that I just thought I threw up in my mouth a little.
my gosh, you just went there. Okay, let's go to Janeway's ready room. Janeway is now with the Bomar.
Yes.
And I love that line from the one Bomar guy. Then you proceed to unleash some sort of rogue Borg, which is very funny to hear.
Yes.
But the Bomar are not helpful, not in the least.
Well, they literally say to Janeway, he says, "I question your competence, Captain."
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And they also say, we will find your rogue Borg and we will destroy your rogue Borg. So he's already thrown it out there. He's going to kill.
That's what they're going to do. Nine.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not good.
Then we go to engineering and we see this beautiful crane shot. Now here's something I loved. I loved this moment of the crane shot coming down and you see everybody hustling around trying to figure out what's going on. There's Harry and B'Elanna are in there and they're looking at for any evidence of what, you know, happened to Seven.
Yes. We're not in engineering though. We're in the cargo bay.
Oh,
we're
sorry.
Seven's regeneration.
That's output. What I meant. Yeah. I said engineering, I meant cargo.
Cargo.
I meant it because it was a beautiful shot.
I knew you meant it. Continue.
And by the way, that crane shot at the top, I think Voyager was just about the last place I remember a TV show film set using what was, I want to say, the Fisher crane, the Zeus crane. It was a crane where you strapped the camera operator into a seat. The assistant was strapped into a seat as well.
Yeah.
The big film camera was set on top of this crane. Mm-hmm. And the two people were lifted up in the air along with the camera to operate the shot. I haven't seen one of those in 25 years. I mean,
So the 90s were the last era, a decade that they were used in.
That I remember, that kind of crane. But we had one sitting on the stage. It was either a Paramount crane or owned by somebody, maybe our grip department or key grip or someone. Because that crane would sit on the stage a lot. But we didn't use it super often because it was a big time consuming thing to strap the operators in and balance it and get the camera on. And you couldn't just, once the operators were on there and things were balanced, you couldn't just, like, if a camera operator had to pee, you couldn't just say, "Hey, lower it and let him step off and go pee," because it had the weights in it. If he stepped off and all of a sudden
changes everything,
boom, that thing would shoot up in the air. So they had to lower it down, get the weight balance, get the thing locked, and then he could unstrap and step off. It was a time consuming tool to use.
Yeah.
But I remember, I think it was called a Zeus crane or a Fisher crane, or Fisher Zeus. I can't remember.
Gotcha.
That was the crane probably they used. And this is B'Elanna's first scene in the whole episode.
It is. And and her first scene is to tease Harry over Seven, right?
Yes. Which I love that story.
I know you like that.
I do. I think that's a cute story. I also like that Harry's like, "Oh, I've been studying this Borg language. I think I could translate this data link." Look at that.
Harry has language lessons.
What I'm about to say.
Is that what you're going to say? Oh, yes. I jumped the gun.
We should do the Borg language lesson as part of our Patreon bonus. Since we do other languages, we should include Borg, maybe some Klingon, some Vulcan. We should start including Romulan, all the Trek languages.
Okay,
we're going to start doing as part of our language.
That's a great idea. So my plan was this: after Chinese, I was going to jump to German, and so now after German, I can now jump to either Klingon or just split it up. 1 week it's Klingon, next week it's Vulcan. Right?
I think this is important that our Patreon fans who get all of this amazing bonus material start to learn some Trek languages.
Okay.
Not just Russian and what have we
not
learned?
Just Earth languages.
Not Earth languages. We've
learned, Mandarin, Chinese, Russian, and then we're going to learn German. So you're so correct. This is a podcast about a show about Star Trek. And so why not learn the language of other Trek species?
Just so you guys know, that's in your future.
Patreon patrons.
That's right. So Chakotay shows up. Janeway's in the cargo bay. Not the engineering bay.
No.
The cargo bay.
Engineering bay. Not Michael Bay either.
And not Michael Bay either.
No.
Yes, I don't have any more bay jokes. I was going to go Hudson's Bay, the department store in Canada. I was going to go with all the bay things.
I was waiting for you to come up with another bay. Okay.
They start walking to a turbo lift and they get in this turbo lift and they're in there for a long time. And all of a sudden I started thinking, I live on the 26th floor of my apartment building in Vancouver.
Yes.
And my elevator is faster than that turbo
lift. That turbo lift. So really, it's not a turbo lift. It's a slow lift.
It's a slow freaking lift. It's just however long the scene is written is how long the ride's going to be. Yeah, they were in that for a long time.
They were
trying to figure out. And Janeway, and she's like, there's got to be a puzzle piece that I'm missing, which is, you know, because we know it's great for Janeway to say it because we know that's what's something else is going on here, but we haven't quite figured it out. We go off to sick bay. They walk into sick bay and the doctor says that she has a high concentration of Borg organelles in the bone marrow and lymphatic nodes.
Yeah.
Organelles? That sounds like something you put on a salad. Like it sounds like a fancy... Yes, and we have for tonight a salad special with organic lettuce and the organelles. It sounds like...
Or it also sounds like some doo-wop group from the 50s. And now on stage, the organelles, right? Exactly. So I felt that too.
Organelles? I just never heard that word, but she's got them. Seven's got some organelles. Yes.
By the way, can I just jump back? I know we're now in the sick bay scene. Can I just jump back to to the cargo bay when B'Elanna finds that Borg data link, which has the log entries? So my whole thought was she grabs it, then she hands it to me, and then I'm touching it, and then I hand it to Janeway. And now that we live in the pandemic years, all I can think about is no.
There's so many germs on that thing.
Oh my God, there's no sanitization. There's no sanitization going on. Nobody is sanitizing. And I just kept I was cringing. And this is something that I would not do if COVID if it never happened, but I'm definitely doing this now. So did you also notice that when we were doing
that? But I think about that sometimes as I watch our show, because you know, we're 25 years away from a pandemic. We did, you know, there's no thought to although in the future, things are cleansed constantly. Like there's probably, you know, air scrubbers and all kinds of things happening scientifically.
Of course.
That,
I mean, there's filters on the transporter already, right? So when you transport something, there are filters that clean, that keep out any type of pathogens or anything, anything that's invasive, right? For the most part. So we don't even have to think about that. But now in 2020 and 21, we definitely have to think about that. So these dormant nanoprobes have reasserted themselves in Seven of Nine's body.
Organelles.
The organelles, yes. And the doctor has fabricated a solution that will neutralize the nanoprobes with a genetic resequencing vector, according to the doctor. But someone's got to be close enough to apply this through a hypospray, right? So that's
The plan.
That's the plan. And Tuvok.
That's
our fix. Right. So Tuvok is the spearhead of this plan, but Paris is also part of this because we're on the bridge and Tuvok and Paris come up with a way to get past the perimeter sensors, and Janeway gives the authorization to stop Seven with any means necessary if, number one, the resequencer fails, and number two, Tuvok and Paris are unable to reason with Seven. So didn't this kind of make you feel like, whoa, that's pretty hardcore? She basically gives the kill order to Tuvok, like you're going to take her out, which I thought was kind of harsh.
And I wrote that down. Like
I didn't Jimmy remember
says
that.
They can
I
kill
don't
her.
Remember
it's
that.
Cold.
Yeah. It's cold-blooded. Yeah.
Now, this is the beginning of my hatred of Tom Paris's performance.
Oh, boy.
Episode.
Here it comes.
Because I'm like, I had the same feeling. I'm like, this is a scene loaded with some real stakes and some real kind of darkness. And
I felt
like I was just playing this like generic hero in space who has lots of information. And I don't know what I was playing, but I don't know if I just didn't break this down from like, what is really going on? Not just about me. I felt like it was a little bit about my line, disconnected from story. And this was the beginning of all of it. Like I felt that way in the shuttle.
Okay.
I felt that way. I just felt like, wow, I don't know where I was in this story because I don't feel connected to it. I felt like it's generic sort of, hey, here's some information, Captain. I will regurgitate my lines and say these words, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, is my, I'm going to play Detective Picky now. I'm going to say, first of all, number one, you have typically on the bridge, typically you're saying, yes, ma'am. And you're saying, you know, small little quick snippets, right? And all of a sudden you have a monologue at Tuvok Station. That's not normal for you, number one. So that's a new thing that you're dealing with. And secondly, God knows what you could have been dealing with in terms of at-home issues, dealing with something happened with your kid or whatever. You know,
I had a very full kind of home life going on, but so did other people. I mean, Kate had a very full home life.
But it can creep into your work on set where you're not connected. Yeah. It's definitely possible. Yeah, although, again, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I didn't sit there watching that scene and it wasn't a glaring thing where I didn't think, oh my God, he's not connected. So I think
it was just generic. I don't think it harms the episode.
No, it didn't harm the episode at all. I know that you could have zhuzhed it up for sure.
I felt like it was just disconnected from a real, true human experience, and it was all very, very generic. Like I said, just generic hero talk that was not real in hardly any way. And I don't know, it just felt like I was disconnected from my scene partners, from the other actors, like not really kind of riding that wave with them of what's going on in the scene and the story. I was just sort of, I don't know, it was the stiff sci-fi talk, you know. Anyway, hated it. Paris's plan is, you know, let's take a shuttle, it'll have a smaller warp signature, we won't be detected by these Bomar peoples, and and Janeway says you can kill her. So we cut out to Seven's shuttle. Now Seven is not the pilot, the fancy pilot of Voyager, but yet she seems to do the best flying we've seen in 4.5 years by like weaving in and out of seven different Bomar, you know, vessels.
You wrote like, weaving in and out.
Let her drive the ship. Like, she's pretty good.
But she wasn't weaving in and out. My note was, Seven, you know, the Bomar. Well, first of all, the funny thing was the Bomar guy talking to Seven, right? His message was, Borg drone, you have, and this was the Shakespearean Southern guy, you have committed an infraction against the Bomar sovereignty. Cut power to your engines and lower your shields. Prepare to be boarded. And Seven responds by acting like an NFL running back, blasting through the entire defense. Yes. She's banging into all the shuttles. She wasn't avoiding anything. She was like, I'm just gonna hit every single one.
Well, so she crashed through our shuttle bay door, which we've already discussed is not how shuttles work. So why not just bang them out of the way? Why not bumper car them?
She was bumper carring everybody. It was really kind of funny that she just didn't care. She mowed them all down.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Paris tells Tuvok, Tuvok's gonna beam over to Seven's shuttle, and Paris is like, this is too dangerous. This is another scene where I like turn around in my shuttle. I'm like kind of leaning back. I'm like, Tuvok, buddy, come on, let's talk. There's a couple of guys talking, right, Tuvok? I was like, why am I playing? We're in the middle of a chase scene. And I'm like, why didn't somebody tell me that I was not playing this right? I rely on directors and writers to remind me. Even when I'm directing, I rely on writers and people.
Oh my God.
This one was just.
Are you going to blame this on LeVar? Is this
LeVar's fault? I don't know. No, I'm blaming it all on me.
Okay.
I did not do my work. I wish someone had backed me up here to say,
dude. So you were way too casual in the shuttle. Way too casual. Shuttle. Okay. I got you.
But Tuvok does beam over. And coincidentally, when he beams over, Seven has moved from the driver's seat of her fancy fast sports car.
Yeah.
She's standing in the back of the shuttle in exactly the right place she needs to be to be knock where him out. Like, how convenient is that? I don't know.
Oh my goodness. This is just so funny. I love this scene.
And then she disables Paris's shuttle. So she's like superhero. She can mind read where Tuvok is going to beam into.
Right.
And know ahead of be ahead of it.
Well, it's funny because when the fight ensues inside the back of Seven shuttle, they do this little weird dance thing, right? And then Tuvok is trying to Vulcan nerve pinch Seven, and she blocks him, and then she does some cool, I don't know, crazy Wing Chun.
It was a nice little fight back there.
Yeah, a little nice fight. And then she ends up just taking him out with exactly the same move he was going to put on her.
Yeah.
She Vulcan nerve pinches the Vulcan. Yeah. So that's the ultimate slap in the face, right? Yes, so it is. Like, I'm going to disable you at with your own weapon, which, you know, weapon is the Vulcan nerve pinch.
Yeah. And she has assimilated Vulcans. She says later on, Vulcan species 3259.
Yes.
She, you know, she's got them all cataloged.
She knows it all. And she takes out your shuttle. She takes out your shuttle's propulsion systems. Yep. And it was so quick and you were disabled.
She's good. I don't know why we need anybody else on Voyager at this point. She has shown in one episode that I'm just saying,
can we all go to the holodeck and allow Seven all, to be on the bridge?
Yeah,
we could just have a vacation.
She can fly the ship, she can fly be the weapons, she can, tactical, yeah. all of
yes,
it.
Yes, she's right? like a one man, one person else. Army.
She's a superhero,
she's a superhero.
Yes,
okay. Oh, so inside the shuttle, Seven has erected a force field to keep Tuvok at bay, mm-hmm. and then Tuvok starts quizzing Seven, like, why are you doing this? Yeah.
By the way, here's another inconsistency.
Detective Picky.
Detective Picky this time.
Yes.
So our camera team would occasionally use filters on the camera. They would use, depending on what the look is, sometimes often for any performer that we wanted to appear more attractive, or they would use a glamour filter.
A soft filter.
Yeah. Marvin Rush was always very thoughtful of, in particular, the ladies on the show.
Yes.
So that he would light them with a little more attention. He would mm-hmm. often use a glamour filter to give them a little more glamour or beauty, the perception of softness and beauty.
Yes.
Anyway, so all that said to say, all of a sudden in the middle of the story, I see like the glamour filter 5000 come out in the scene for Seven of Nine. And I'm like, wait a minute. We haven't used that look on her in any of the previous scenes. Like, I could see if every time we cut to Seven, she's got this sort of glamour look. But I feel like it was, again, a lack of continuity or consistency.
Interesting. That
for whatever reason, they decided in this shuttle scene with Tuvok, we're going to whip out the old Hollywood glamour 1955 or whatever. It was a very strong look that just didn't match anything else. And I think
Is that though? Is that Marvin? That would be Marvin. Is that LeVar? Is LeVar doing that?
No, that would be Marvin. I think that would be Marvin.
That's a little weird.
And he's not usually the type to have those inconsistencies. So I feel like if you're going to make a strong filter choice, then it's got to be every time you photograph that actor.
Okay.
They look,
so you're saying it comes out in this scene. It's in only in this scene, and every other scene with Seven before this, you do not see the glamour filter.
Okay. I do not think so. Nope.
All right. I'm gonna have to rewatch this now. It was just a very different look on her. Okay.
And I think it's because she starts getting emotional in the scene, and I think they wanted some softness and vulnerability. And so it's just an idea that probably came in the moment. Hey, let's go in the soft filter, whatever it was called.
Promise. But it just seemed all over the place for you.
It just didn't seem like the same look. Like, why all of a sudden does she look like kind of that beauty?
I didn't see that. So I'm going to have to rewatch it now to see what you're saying, because I didn't.
Well, she's getting emotional and she's talking about, she's feeling apprehensive and fear. And why should I feel afraid? Because I'm going to be back with the Borg. It doesn't make any sense. And
she also decides not to assimilate Tuvok. Right. So that's vulnerable scene there.
Yeah. And he says there are no Borg, because we've learned from the Bomar that they literally every speck of dust that crosses into their region
is tracked
and they know about it. So Tuvok's pretty confident that what she's saying, that there's a Borg vessel waiting for her, that's not what she's
correct.
He makes the gamble. He says, I don't think that's what it is. Let me come with you.
Mm-hmm. But if they track everything, don't you think they would have tracked Seven of Nine's parents' vessel? You know, I know I'm jumping ahead.
Ooh,
but
it's just
like,
nice.
It's like, why aren't you catch. Tracking that? Hello.
Maybe that, has, maybe they didn't back then.
Yeah.
It has a beacon.
That beacon would have been picked up by their perimeter grid, I'm sure. Yeah. But maybe they didn't install that until, 10 years ago, right?
So but it's got a beacon. They would be picking up
the beacon. They would know that. I know. That's so silly.
Yeah, there's a couple
excavated that. That would have been their archaeological division would have went down there.
Yeah, I'm a little all over on this one.
You've turned me into Detective Picky too. I didn't want to be Detective Picky. Dang it.
Okay. But there's such good moments too. There really
okay,
are.
Okay, I think. Good. Okay. Good.
All Janeway. Right. So we go to Janeway.
Oh, sorry. You forgot to say Tuvok actually cues in on the back of the shuttle. He says, you know what? Your behavior demonstrates affection and sentiment. Mm-hmm. These are traits of humanity, not of the Borg. So something's going on that you're not, aware of. Yeah. That has nothing to do with a Borg beacon. So that was an important point to this episode for sure.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah. So the next scene we cut to back to Cargo Bay where the Borg alcoves are.
Yep.
And there's Janeway standing.
Cool shot of Janeway standing in Seven's regeneration alcove, right? I like that shot.
It was cool.
Oh, no. What is it? Talk to me.
I wish she was just kind of walking and pacing around and studying it because she's just sort of standing there. Nothing's going to happen there. Like, is she, because she was standing there, like she wasn't locked into, she wasn't experiencing.
No, she's not experiencing a regeneration cycle. No. But she's so, like, trying what's to happening?
She's just sort of standing there. I don't know. To me, I thought it was like goofy. I was like, what is she? It's goofy. Like, you're not going to. You're not going to get plugged into the Borg Collective just by standing there.
All right, here, let me just give you an example, okay? What if you were lost and Janeway's like, gosh, we've got to put this puzzle together, and she just sits in your helmsman's chair on the bridge and thinks.
Well, I think that is Tom? If,
that's
if
kind of what
that scene you described.
Yeah.
If we just cut to her sitting in the chair, I think it still would be cheesy. If we cut to her sitting in her chair, and seeing that she's going, I don't know what I don't have a solution. And then she looks at my chair and she gets up and she slowly walks over to it. And she thinks maybe if I just sit down here, and she sits in it for a moment, that would be a different.
Okay.
Like if we had seen her come in, look at it, study it, and then stand in it
and look around. Okay.
But we just cut to her standing there.
Standing there. Yes.
And it was like, that version to me is just like, okay. Oh, we come in the middle of her standing in the Borg thing.
Yes.
Thinking that she's going to plug in and that's not how it works. So
gotcha. All right.
That's my feelings there, Mr. Okay. Detective Picky.
You are Detective Picky today. Harry has now deciphered Seven's log entries.
Yes.
So he enters into the scene, into the cargo bay, and hands it over to Janeway, but not before he talks about how there's a lot of entries about himself and he's a little embarrassed and
yes, he is.
Seven seems to know his exact
very predictable.
Yeah. He's so predictable and he's embarrassed. And this is where Janeway
played that scene really well, by the way.
Did you like that?
Unlike Tom Paris, I think you were, you had subtlety and you had, a kind of a connection to the story and it's a good sense of humor. I thought it was really good.
I really did. All right. I appreciate that. But here's where the Raven thing comes into play, right?
Yes.
So she figures out that it's a Raven. It gives Janeway the clue. And Harry's like, oh, how is that a clue? And she goes, now I know how to find her. Now I know where to look or something like that.
Yeah, she says something like, in the journal, it says, the bird paralyzes her, that she's filled with fear every time she sees the bird. Janeway's like, well, what is that bird? Maybe that bird's a crow or
A
raven.
Ooh, was that your Janeway?
Not really. It was just a dramatic whisper raven.
But it was almost a raven.
Yeah.
See, it sounded Janeway-esque to me. So
I thought it was very dramatic. And then she's like, now I know. Mm-hmm. What? How do you, what?
What do you know?
Thank Janeway. God, by the way, Janeway didn't see the flashbacks that the audience sees because she would know it's not a raven. It's a hawk or a falcon. But sure, if she wants to imagine that it's a raven, I saw it.
Oh my goodness. So now we're back in Seven shuttle and Tuvok then offers to accompany Seven to go to the lunar surface because the signal is coming from somewhere on the lunar surface and Tuvok thinks it's not the Borg because Seven says, well, you're going to get assimilated if you come with me. He's like, I really think this is something else. So I'm going to offer to help you.
Tuvok says, I will accompany you to the surface and we're on his back. And then he continues, you don't need to go alone. The worst ADR line I've ever heard in my life. Go back and look at it. It was like, it was completely in the scene. I will accompany you to the surface. And then you hear,
You don't need to go alone.
It was horrible. It was like, it didn't sound like it was in the same space. It was like, how did that get on the air? It was
my God, you're Detective Picky. I didn't catch any of this.
Go back and look
clearly,
at that.
It's clearly line. Looped and it's clearly
you
added
don't
in.
Need to go alone.
You make it sound like he's underwater in or something.
I don't know. It's a different. It was recorded separately and it was not mixed well. It was just,
okay. Yeah. Was it one of those add-in pieces of dialogue that wasn't even in the script?
I think it was not in the script, and they wanted to play out the moment a little longer with Seven on camera because you could see her sort of processing what Tuvok was saying.
You're on. They need to go alone.
Yes, I will accompany you to the surface.
You don't need to go alone.
What? That's not the same person in the same place. It's bad.
You make it sound like he's Bane from the.
Was bad.
Batman world. Okay, let's move forward. Paris, you're now in your shuttle and you're debriefing Janeway about what's happening.
Picking up an unusual signal, an M-class moon orbiting the fifth planet from a yellow dwarf star.
Correct.
Yeah, that's what Paris is saying.
Right.
This is okay. And, this is not as bad as some of the other Paris stuff I felt like I was doing. I felt like at least here I was piloting and so I'm delivering information and I seemed to have stakes. This was okay. I'll give
you're
this
more satisfied with this line delivery.
Solid C.
Yes. You give it a C. Still average. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So now we go to the Bomarian. Moon surface. Can I use Bomarian?
Beautiful planet shot.
Yes. And you hate that shot. You think it's so simplistic. You think it's too two-dimensional. It looks like a painting to you, correct? That there's not a three-dimensional.
I did not like the planet shot. Did not like it. I felt like it was some recycled elements of Lone Pine mixed with some steam rising up that didn't seem like it was in the same dimensions or perspective. I just didn't like that planet shot. Okay. But we've had, like I said, it was a flyby that I think was some of the best ship shots I've ever seen with the shuttle.
Right, so there's some amazing shots and some shots that you question. I hear you. And then seven and two. And by the way, every time I type in seven on my little, my iPhone, it auto-corrects to Sven, S-V-E-N, the Swedish male first name. So I get right here, it says Sven and Tuvok track the Borg signal.
That's a different story.
That's a whole different story.
Tuvok, she is very nervous. She sees a partially assimilated Federation vessel. Mm-hmm. And she says, I think that looks familiar. Tuvok says it's a Federation vessel.
Yeah.
All of a sudden she has a flashback. Papa, help me. Yeah. So she calls her dad Papa a lot, which that sort of jumped out at me here. A very sort of old-fashioned name. And
that's like Scandinavian way to call your dad, it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Papa.
Yeah.
Or it sounds like something you might call a grandfather, but not your dad.
Isn't that pop-pop?
Pop-pop, maybe. Yeah. I wish that instead of Papa, that she had said Daddy, or something a little less formal, less old-fashioned, less dated. I don't know, maybe.
I'm just wondering if they went off of East... Northern European, right? So Scandinavian countries.
Maybe her Scandinavian. Yeah, maybe.
Her heritage. I don't know.
Maybe. Okay. It didn't feel as vulnerable or emotional as the word daddy, but that's just to me.
Okay.
That's fine. Yeah. Papa, help me. She has a flashback. We realize that the Raven was her ship in the sequence that comes out. Jerry Ryan starts a very vulnerable kind of realization and memories coming back to her. She remembers her birthday when she had, when she was six candles and one to grow on.
Yeah.
Tells the whole story. Very, very human moments here with Jerry and Seven. Yeah.
And she kind of reverts to a childlike state, right? She's kind of going.
She does. She goes literally climbs under the console like she does in her flashbacks.
Yeah.
So she's sort of reliving some of this through her imagination, which is part of our theme. It's you know what Janeway has set up in that first episode, first
scene.
Right. She's reliving it and really experiencing it through her imagination and these memories. Mm-hmm. I love when Tuvok they start getting attacked by the Bomar. Bomar have now come to this lunar surface and are attacking, trying to kill the Borg. They're trying to race outside so they can get a signal to beam back. And I thought some of the crashing and the pulling of debris and things like that, I thought that was really some exciting and well-shot action. some good action moments.
And then Voyager shows up. And so they start trying to target the weapon systems of the Bomar ships. They only take out a couple of the ships. And I kept thinking, why didn't they just kind of like, you know, do what Seven of Nine did and just crash into them and just knock them out?
Now that we know that's how ships work.
That's the way ships work. In this episode.
In this episode, all right. Everything works however you want it to work. I loved on the bridge when the Bomar guy is saying, you need to get the heck out of here. And Janeway just goes, I don't have time for this.
I know. She snaps him out. Like, yeah.
Such a great reading. So dismissive. Fool.
Yeah. It was so good. That was so
clever. It made me laugh.
That guy got Janeway'd. That guy got Janeway'd.
100%. He did. Yeah.
All right. Seven and Tuvok trying to find a way out. And they finally do find out a way out of the wrecked ship. And that is when Paris beams them aboard his shuttle. And then my question was, well, what about the shuttle that Seven was in? You guys are just going to leave that on the planet surface? Or in space?
Floating around in space. Yep. Well, so that's a good shuttle too. That's a crashing shuttle that breaks through giant cargo bay doors.
That's a superhero shuttle. You're right. That is
they should go get
shuttle.
That one.
They need that one because it clearly has some crazy titanium shielding or some extra Borg shielding that it can just break through shuttle bay doors like nothing. Cutting through butter.
We did get everybody back, but we do realize that there's not going to be a shortcut this time. Janeway says, looks like there won't be any shortcuts. Mm-hmm. And they've got to leave Bomar space and take the long way.
Yeah.
Then we go to the holodeck and Janeway walks into Da Vinci's workshop and finds Seven in there.
Yep.
And I wrote down, you know, Jerry played a beautiful scene here. She seems so childlike and vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Seven talks about how she's considering what her parents were like. Now she realizes, like, there's a whole part of my life that I didn't, now that I've experienced it through my imagination, through these flashbacks, through this, that it's opening up this desire to know who my parents were.
Yeah.
And Janeway says, well, you know, there's a lot about your parents in the database. They did some amazing things. And maybe you can, you know, kind of look into that.
Yeah.
And some of this may encourage her imagination even more to understand where she came from. Mm-hmm. And it was such a great moment. I loved the way Jerry read it, the way it was written. She goes, perhaps I will.
Yeah.
Someday. Yeah,
it's then a little too overwhelming now, but someday, exactly.
And then a pause, someday, not now.
Yeah.
It was so well done. Jerry's performance, I thought, was really wonderful. And in this episode, we see a vulnerable Seven for the very first time. And I think often that works really, really well. And sometimes, like I said, some of the inconsistencies kind of bump me. But
And Brian Fuller's lines, Brian Fuller's dialogue also.
Right? Yeah.
So
good job there. Great moments in there. Yeah. What was your theme for this episode?
I'm going to ask you that because I didn't come up with anything. So let me throw that back again.
Okay. This one was a tricky one. As you can tell, I was kind of mixed. I was loved a lot of things and other things I thought just kept breaking me out of it. But the theme I felt like was something like this: feeling your feelings or creativity or your imagination. These human experiences can feel amazing, but they can also be painful, and you can't have one without the other. That's what I wrote down. So this human experience that Seven is finally starting to see through her flashbacks, her imagination, her feelings, that she's not just intellectually thinking of it, but she's not going from one task to the other, but she's pausing to feel her feelings.
Yeah.
That has an upside and a downside, and you can't have one without the other. You can't you can't feel love without some pain. You can't feel the good without risking the bad, you know. So
that's good. I'm going to piggyback on that, and I'm going to say this is also on the same thing, and this is more of what Janeway was saying to her in the beginning, which was, she said, okay, imagination, creativity, fantasy, human progress would not exist without these traits or these exploration into this area of humanity, the imagination of things, the creativity of stuff. So
I love
things are good, right?
Yeah,
and that's the only way to have progress as humans. We need to have creativity and imagination in our lives to be a full, complete human being, right? That's part of us too. So
I love it.
That's the theme.
Well, that was great. So yeah. I'm so glad we got to watch this episode and realize that, by the way, I was not far off on the Raven and the kind of the Edgar Allan Poe sort of structure of
about
like
the loss the of
pain
the,
mm-hmm. and it will nevermore be. Nevermore. She will, it's Seven's realization that she will never have her parents truly. The only way to have it is through some of this sort of imagination and memory, but it's also going to have pain. So, yeah.
Good call, man. So you were right on that one. I was right that one of us was going to have more of a storyline.
Yes, really.
And as much as you thought that your line delivery wasn't where it should be, it's definitely not something that was glaring. You know, no, I don't think anybody watching this is going to be like, what the hell was that? No one's going to say that. So you're very critical of yourself. So it is. And as you should be, because you can see everything, right? So, but you're also a little hard on yourself. So I would I'd give you a B minus.
Okay.
Higher than a C.
I'll take a B minus.
I'll give you B minus. All right.
I was a solid B minus student in high school. That was like, and everybody, my teachers would all say, like, you could be an A plus. You could be a straight A student if you tried a little. And I was like, I'm a solid B.
So you basically in high school, you ravened it is what you did.
I ravened
high school.
Yes,
it's okay.
I did.
It's all right. I did. See, we have new dialogue now. All right. So next week, everybody, please join us when Robbie and I will be discussing the episode Scientific Method.